Hi, I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie V47, from the Ranger Command Power Hour and the Starfleet Escape Podcast. You're listening to another great Four-Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out foureyedradio.com. It's Morphin time!
Ay-ay-ay-ay-ay! It's the Ranger Command Power Hour!
Today on the Power Hour, Extra Episode 93, Ranger Command at Anime Central. Welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. So I'm the Ranger up with your host. I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47.
And I'm Teresa, also known as TetriB17.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/RangerCommandPH to learn more about supporting Ranger Command Power Hour. Thanks to our $5 and above patrons, Chris P., Steve F., Aaron W., Jacob P., Justin Z., Charlie N., Brian M., Craig M., Liz M., Mason M., Tyler W., Steve R., Hassan A., Josh P., Derek G., and Teresa B. for supporting us this month. Remember, you can go to linktr.ee/RangerCommandPH for all the links of our show, including the Amazon affiliate link at amazon.com/shop/RangerCommandPH. Hello, Teresa.
Hi.
So welcome back to the show. We are going to be talking about Anime Central 2023. This was your first time at an Anime Central, right?
Yes, that's right.
This was probably my 10th or 11th. So I've been going to Anime Central off and on since 1999-2000. So for those who don't know, Anime Central, it's abbreviated usually as ASEN. It's the largest anime, manga, and Japanese pop culture convention in Chicago and the Midwest. So I think overall, in terms of nationwide anime conventions, it's probably the third or fourth, just in terms of the amount of attendees. Anime Central started in 1998. As part of its mission, ASEN brings fans together with guests from Japanese and U.S. sectors of the anime and manga industry, as well as gaming, cinema, and Asian culture personalities. The event includes a huge exhibit hall, massive video game room, concerts, dances, educational panels and workshops, premiere screenings, autograph sessions, 24-hour video rooms, tabletop gaming, and much more. Some of their 2023 guests included anime directors such as Takehiko Aburu, animators, voice actors. They even have DJs from overseas, from Japan, that do their anime soap bubble dances. They have a ton of guests every year from anime, not only from the U.S. side, but from the Japanese side, including later on in the show, you'll be able to hear voice actor and producer and director Tony Oliver, who Power Rangers fans will remember him as the voice of Saba, as well as other characters. And he was also a co-executive producer on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So Anime Central is just huge.
Right.
So a little bit of history with the convention for me. Like I said, this is probably my 10th or 11th Anime Central, or even more. I went for a number of years. I even worked the convention before I did graphic design and as part of their production department. And so like I've been an attendee, I've worked the convention, and then I just kind of fell out of anime for a decent chunk there. Really didn't go to Anime Central for a number of years. So this year applied for press because I knew Tony Oliver was going to be there. I wanted to interview him, obviously, for the 30th anniversary of Power Rangers. And this just happens to be your first time at Anime Central. So what was that first time experience for you? Because this isn't your first convention, obviously, but it is your first ASEN.
Right. Anything related? Well, no, C2E2 was also part of anime as well. But I've been wanting to go to Anime Central, but it's always like at the end of my birthday or within the week of my birthday. Or last year it was RJ was going to be born and all that and whatnot. But it's always, always at the end of my birthday.
It's always like at a weird time where we can't do it or we've got something else going on. And I know you've been wanting to go for years and years. And actually, Teresa also got in via press pass just to, you know, help me with the coverage of the convention. And I went all 3 days. I took that Friday off. We went Saturday and Sunday together.
Yes. Yes, with RJ. That kid.
That little guy.
He has been, oh my God. He has been to conventions for, I don't know how many now, before 1 year old.
It was actually very funny because it took place in May, which was right before RJ's first birthday. This was actually his third convention because we had two C2E2s and then Anime Central. So not even a year old, and he was a pro at conventions.
Maybe that's why he's so very, like, okay with noise and all that.
Yeah, I think so. Just because he's been always very chill at these conventions. But overall, how was your experience with this being your first Anime Central?
Well, it was very different from other conventions that I attended to. Because I was thinking this is only specifically for anime. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed with how much vendors and artists that they had for this year. And I actually just went through all the artist alley. I think it was Saturday and half of Sunday that we went there. Because you were there interviewing Tony Oliver, and RJ and I was just like every aisle. We're like going plowing through all the people. And it was nice to see a lot of, you know, anime vendors and artists. Because C2E2 is very spread out. Mm-hmm. But for Anime Central, it was just compact, but with spacious enough for people to go different aisles. But not until you told me that, oh, and the other hotel.
The hotel had other events going on.
Yes. But I didn't plan it out because it was the weekend of, like, I started work and all that. But if I had to plan it out even more for the next year, probably I would go to the panels and whatever anime I would like to see for the panels or any actors or voice actors. Mm-hmm. I would probably go. Most especially, I think next year for the new, hopefully they will invite the live action actors for One Piece. I'm very interested with that. Hopefully. Overall, my experience was fun. I just had fun with you, with the fan band, RJ, you. And yeah, the 2 days was fun.
What about, because this was anime specific, what did you think of the cosplay that you saw this year?
It was more, I know there's more like people who are very into the cosplay, but I think comparing it to other conventions, I think this one is less. It's less cosplayers, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's more teenagers, I think.
Yeah. So that's one of the huge things that I've noticed. And partially kind of the reason why, I don't want to say I stopped going to Anime Central, but I kind of fell out of it because I think one of the last times I went back in 2010 or 11, around there, even back then, it was just a much younger crowd. Mm-hmm. A lot of teenagers, a lot of crazy stuff happening. They have a lot of panels and stuff in the Hyatt Regency, which is the big Hyatt in Rosemont, Illinois. And even when I went to ASEN as a regular, like the Hyatt Regency and ASEN, it was like a party convention. People would have room parties and go crazy, and the Hyatt would be a buzz of activity. And that was the big difference with this year going, because we only stayed in the convention center. We didn't go to the couple other hotels where a lot more of the action was taking place, because if you go usually at the Hyatt entrance, that whole entrance area is just filled a crowd of like cosplayers and people taking pictures of like at the water fountain or whatever. And you get a lot of that at the Rosemont Convention Center. So a lot of that has shifted over. And you're right. The vendor Artist Alley, I think they do a great job with the amount of industry booths that they're able to get, like Viz or Crunchyroll or Funimation. They have these huge vendor booths, and I really like what they did this year with all the major anime studios and the big sponsors mm-hmm. were up front. There was a bit of a gap where people could rest or hang out, and that's where they had the press area, which I'll get to in a second. And then the back half of the show was all of the vendors. And then you mm-hmm. had this whole separate hall off to the side with Artist Alley. And, you know, we went through that Artist Alley. We were just going up and down every aisle. And you're right. The aisles were a lot more spacious than C2E2 even, even in the vendors room, which I really appreciated. So I really enjoyed the vendors and the Artist Alley. It was amazing to see great artists and great talent. And then for, you know, the vendors room where they had all the big studios up in front or major mm-hmm. sponsorships, that's where off to the side, that's where the guests were doing their autograph sessions. And there were also autograph sessions at certain booths that they were either had ticketed or lined up. So I thought organization-wise, the con did a really good job with organization. We got our tickets pretty quick once we were in the show. And I think overall, just my overall review of it is that as someone, as a member of press, and this is my first time going to Anime Central as press, but not working the show, because I was part of the press and production department when I did work the convention. But being kind of on the other side of that and doing coverage for a podcast, I thought the organization for the communication, they have their own press Facebook group. Mm-hmm. I think they organized that very well. We had a hiccup with our interview just because we didn't know when the schedule was going to be. And I didn't get that until, you know, an hour before I had to do the interview. But that wasn't the fault of the press department. You know, it was more along, you know, the scheduling with the actors and stuff. My only gripe as a member of the press is that they kind of had this press area that was kind of curtained off, and they had a stage, mm-hmm. but it's in the middle of the show floor. It was between the vendors and between the big booths. Well, you have the Bang Zoom Entertainment, and they're doing their, you know, voice actor auditions, and they're very loud in the background. So as I was doing the interview with Tony Oliver, I mean, he even mentioned, he's like, I hope you can like hear this audio. And I was like, yeah, I hope so too. That was my only gripe as just someone on the press side of it. Like, I really mm-hmm. wish they had a dedicated room as part of the convention center, because I know they had different panel rooms and breakout rooms. Yeah. I just wish they had a room where you could just chat with, kind of like what C2E2 did. They had one of the side rooms of the convention center, you know, marked mm-hmm. for press. And that was a room that you could go to separate for a convention to interview the guests. And I hope when people do hear this interview that just understand that we were in basically the middle of the show hall. So thankfully, I did a lot of cleaning up on that. But overall, I thought it was a great show. I hadn't been there for many years, and it was kind of nice to come back to it and see all the cosplayers. There was a ton of anime that I did not know about that I learned that I need to catch up on. But overall, Anime Central, I thought, was a great experience. And I think next year they're doing their 25th anniversary convention.
Oh, and it's going to be on my birthday again, I think.
Yeah. So before we get to that, was there any other overall closing thoughts about Anime Central that you had?
Maybe if they're doing their next year, which is 25th year anniversary, I think Rosemont is really good place, but every year I think it's getting, anime is reaching people more, especially mm-hmm. the youth, teenager, and young adults. So they might want to think about having a bigger location. Other than that, it was a nice experience. It was, like you said, I've seen some animes that I need to catch up on. But other than that, that was it. It was a nice experience.
It was definitely a great convention. And if you can believe it, when you say, you know, more space, it's actually funny because all of Anime Central just used to be in the Hyatt and their breakout rooms. And they actually moved to Donald Lee Stevens Convention Center when I was still going. So they've been out of that convention center for maybe 13, 14 years just because they outgrew the hotels. And yeah, I think they're even outgrowing the convention center, which is really crazy. So yeah, if you are interested in Anime Central in 2024, they will return May 17th through 19th at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare and the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont, Illinois. Definitely want to thank the staff at Anime Central Press for being patient with our coverage, as well as giving us access to the convention. And definitely want to thank Tony Oliver for his time at the convention. And you will hear that interview shortly. Tony Oliver began his career over 40 years ago as an actor on stage and on camera, performing in several feature films and dozens of plays. He found success as a voiceover artist, lending his voice to one of the first foreign-made animated features to receive wide release, The Sea Prince and The Fire Child. His first foray into television as a lead role in the popular animated series Robotech. Following that, Tony turned his attention to writing and was soon working as a freelance writer on several cable series for children. In 1988, he joined the staff of Saban Entertainment, story editing the long-running Nickelodeon series The Newsles. He quickly rose through the ranks, producing, story editing, and voice directing numerous broadcast and cable series, as well as promotional pieces and sales presentations. In 1992, Chaim Saban, CEO of Saban Entertainment, asked Tony to help him and development executive Ellen Levy Sarnoff to create a new kind of children television show. The result was the mega children's hit Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Tony not only served as the development producer, but also wrote the pilot episode, producing the network presentation and story edited the first season. As supervising producer, Tony took on additional responsibilities of writing, producing, and directing the Power Rangers live appearances, including the February 1994 appearance at Universal Studios Hollywood, which drew an estimated 50,000 people on a single day. In early 1994, Tony was named supervising producer of Saban's VR Troopers. Later in the year, he co-developed and wrote the script for the international sensation Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Live Tour. He then spent several months in Sydney, Australia, consulting on the 20th Century Fox summer release Mighty Morphin Power Rangers The Movie. In 1995, Tony was named co-producer of Power Rangers. Following that, he produced a number of short-run series, PSAs, and specials for the Fox Kids Network and Fox Family Channel. Tony produced a Power Rangers retrospective special, which earned significant Saturday morning ratings among kids and was the top-rated program on Fox Kids the day it aired. In 1999, Tony left Saban Entertainment, but has continued to develop, produce, voice, and direct numerous projects for TV, film, and video games. I'm here with Tony Oliver, legendary anime voice actor and also co-producer and supervising producer for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers through Power Rangers Zeo. Going to be talking with him a bit for our coverage here at Anime Central. Tony, thank you so much for taking the opportunity to come out here to the convention and getting a chance to talk with me. I wanted to ask, this year is the 30th anniversary of Power Rangers. What are your thoughts on the show lasting for so long with you being there from the start of it?
It's remarkable. It's rare in a career to get to work on a show that has that kind of legs.
Yeah.
Now, I was only in the first three and a half years,
sure.
But it's touched so many people over the years that it's just, it's there's no words. It's just a little kind of bigger. It grew to be so much bigger than we were.
Yeah.
You know, that we started with. So it's been remarkable. And I watched the 30th anniversary special on Netflix, and it actually brought a tear to my eye because they captured that. I'd forgotten the fun and the essence and the, there was a flavor to what we did in Mighty Morphin, and they recaptured that so beautifully. So.
Yeah, it was amazing. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask. Like, did anyone approach you over the years to come back for the show? Or
I did work. I was brought back when Saban bought Power Rangers back from Disney.
Right.
I was brought in for about 10 weeks to work with the writing team to figure out how to pull Balth and Skull back into the show. That's my, mostly what I was hired to do.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so that's the only involvement I've had with the Springer
For Samurai?
Yeah.
Someone kind of noticed, because we put out questions from our listeners, and someone noticed that on your IMDb, there's like a credit for, like, uncredit for Ninja Storm. Is that, is there any truth to that? That was like the first Disney season.
Did I do? I don't think I did a voice on it. I actually consulted on it. Flew me out to New Zealand.
Wow.
And I worked with the post-production team to show them. Power Rangers had to be constructed differently than most TV shows because
right.
you have a combination of foreign footage and dubbing and live action. So I was basically brought out there to kind of show them how to do that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what that was, an uncredited crew.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't as an actor.
Yeah, exactly. One of your iconic Power Ranger roles was the voice of Saba. Can you tell me how that came about?
It's kind of a funny story because it actually relates back to Robotech. When I was in charge of casting the dub cast, the ADR cast, with all the villains and stuff like that, and I wanted to use this actor named Ted Lehman.
Mm.
Ted had played Exidor in Robotech, and he had this wonderful kind of British old man butler kind of thing going, but I tried to find him, but I couldn't. He had retired and moved to Tennessee, and he was in his 80s almost, and so I was talking to the production team, and they said, "What does he sound like?" I said, "Well." Ted sounds kind of like this. And they went, "Well, you're an actor. Why don't you do it?" And that's really how it came about.
Well, they released a toy. Bandai released a, kind of a re-release of Saba. So did they approach you to come back for the voice of that?
It's the only Power Ranger toy with my voice on it.
That's amazing.
So I have like 8 or 9 lines in there. Yeah, it was a funny thing because I got a call out of the blue from Bandai Toys. Going, "Hey, we're going to do this thing. Are you interested?" And so I said, "Yeah." And it was interesting because we couldn't figure out how to logistically get it done between them where they were and me. So basically, they just gave me the go-ahead, and I made an arrangement with the studio. They sent me the dialogue, and we recorded it, edited it, and just sent them the finished tracks. And that's what ended up in the toy.
Did you ever get one for yourself?
No, they promised me one, and I never got one.
Oh, my God. Over the years, because not only did you produce Mighty Morphin, also VR Troopers and Saban's Masked Rider, what were some of the challenges in producing three similar yet tonally different shows?
First of all, I didn't produce those shows. It was a title that was given to me because I worked with the producers.
Oh, okay.
And I did ancillary stuff.
Sure.
Like for Masked Rider, I really took care of the team that went and presented to toy companies.
Got it.
And when we took the cast on the road, that I would do.
Okay.
But Bob Hughes was totally behind that, and he on VR Troopers, he did a great job.
Yeah.
And so that's it. I just did a lot of promo work, and because I had done Power Rangers, I was consulting on
all the other
stuff
because
there were logistical and technical things that needed to be solved.
Then I guess switching to Power Rangers, what was the most challenging aspect of your role as a producer or being involved with the show?
I'm only saying this because I'm older now. But, but I was frustrated a lot because I thought I should be able to do more on the show.
Yeah.
I thought I was ready to executive produce.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not.
Mm.
But so that was the frustrating, was wanting to do more and not being able to.
Yeah.
And so I kept repositioning around until at about 6 or 8 weeks into shooting, I moved from the set back to the corporate offices and decided nobody's paying attention to post-production, so I'm going to produce that.
Mm.
And so that was the challenge, is trying to find my place in this production that was growing so fast.
Right.
And it was hard to keep up with, so I was just trying to find my place in all that.
Yeah.
You know? And then from a publicity standpoint, I'm not the front guy. The guys that needed to be the front guys, so nobody knew what I was doing. Except for maybe the president of Fox Kids Network walked up to me and said, "I know what you did on this show, and thank you for that." So so that was it. Just, you know, I have an actor's ego. I want to get applause,
yeah.
And I'm really behind the scenes on this one.
So with Power Rangers and kind of that behind-the-scenes producing, what was the most challenging aspect in, like, just trying to piece together the different footage? And how heavily were you involved with maybe kind of the direction of some of the plot lines or kind of choosing where everything went?
In the first season, I was intimately involved with the plot lines.
Mm-hmm.
We had a writing team, and I was in charge of it, and all the scripts went through me. So even the scripts I didn't write, I had a hand in.
Yeah.
the challenging thing was learning how to make the show, mm-hmm. how to make this idea that Haim had.
Yeah.
And by the way, I got to give him credit, because most studio heads take credit, but they're not the people that invent it. He actually came up with this.
Yeah.
This is Haim's baby. It was his invention. But trying to take his vision and make it into a palatable television show that made sense, and we could do it within the tiny budget they gave us.
Yeah.
Because we had next to no money to do this. So that was the big challenge at the beginning. As it went on, it was, you know, keeping the stories fresh, finding new ways to... Because since we weren't using the Japanese stories, we had to come up with a fresh story for every single episode.
Yeah.
And that was a bit of a challenge. And writing in the blind. What I mean by that is we had no idea people liked this.
Oh,
we had 13 episodes in the can before anybody saw one. So it's a very insecure position to be in.
Of course.
When you're writing a script going, I have no idea if this is going to work or not. You know, this is the weirdest show I've ever seen, and I'm writing it. So what do I do? I had great writers, though. One of our writers was Gary Glassberg, who went on to be the showrunner and head writer for NCIS.
Wow.
We had some Jeff Deckman and Ronnie Sperling, who were great comedy writers who are still active today.
Yeah.
I mean, I had some great people on that show.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the magic of that original series. Was it was kind of like mishmash, and you didn't know what was happening. But you know, once it found its niche, it really took off. And what was the first inclination that you were like, oh wow, this is going to be huge?
It was a couple of steps. The first one was when we finished our very first episode.
Yeah.
My daughter, the first episode we finished, interesting was episode 13, the pineapple.
Yeah.
Monster. That's the first one we finished. so it didn't air for a long time after we finished it. But I took that episode, I took a copy of that episode to my daughter's third grade class. They were doing, it was a What's Your Dad Do Week kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I explained what I do, and I showed them the episodes, a bunch of third graders. And, you know, and they're loud and obnoxious, and the show starts, and they went silent. Silent. Then there was about a two-minute commercial break. It's just a black segment in the show. For that 2 minutes, they're like, blah, 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 and then when the show came back, they were silent again. And then the next day, I got thank you notes from the kids through the teacher.
Yeah.
And in one viewing, these kids knew the name of the dinosaurs, the colors, the name of the characters, what their relationships were, and what the plot was. In one viewing, for third graders. That's when I started going, we've hit on something. And then the second phase was when it premiered, we expected, I had a conversation with Haim the night before, and we were talking about something else, actually.
Yeah.
So I said, well, tomorrow's the big day. And I'd never seen, the man is a AAA personality, I'd never seen him nervous. He was actually nervous.
Wow.
And he said something to the effect of, you know, he's Israeli, you know, Tony. If we pull this off, it'll be the miracle of the century. And it was. And we expected that we would premiere at one or two.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we'd focus group. We knew kids were going to like some aspect of it. And the focus group is when you put it in front of people. We put just the footage, no story, footage, explosions, a couple of fights with a rock and roll score, put it in front of kids, people, they lost their minds, these kids. So when we premiered, we not only premiered at number one, by the end of the first week, we were matching the ratings of Batman, the animated series, which is in the afternoon, had a bigger potential audience. And by the end of the month, we were beating them and replacing them in the afternoon.
Wow.
So that's when,
almost
immediately, we knew it was like, okay. And then I tried to go to Denny's with Paul Schreier and Jason Narvey. We're friends, and that didn't go well.
Oh, wow.
We were mobbed.
Well, for me, the big moment, like, because I grew up with this. I was 11 when it premiered, and I was the new kid at school, kind of like Tommy, and, I didn't really connect with anyone, but that Green with Evil, every single kid in my class was talking about it, and it was, like, the big thing.
And it holds a record.
Yeah.
That particular show for ratings.
Yeah. And it's... It's just something that has, you know, continued for 30 years continuously, and it's, I think, really something special.
Funny thing about Green with Evil, he was only supposed to be in those 5 episodes.
Yeah.
But the outcry was so big that we had to bring him back.
Wanted to ask maybe some more specific questions. What were your feelings like with some of the original cast members kind of striking, like Austin... Twee and Walter when kind of the Stone Canyon.
Let me clarify things.
Sure.
They did not strike.
Okay.
That would be an action against their contract. They did nothing to breach their contract.
Sure.
We had come to the end of our contract. We had contracted them for a number of episodes based on one season that was supposed to have 45 episodes. Fox ordered an additional 15.
Right.
So now we were at 65 episodes for the first season.
Yeah.
So we ate into the second season's bet. So about halfway through the second season, we need to recontract.
Yeah.
And they knew the movie was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a manager that basically convinced them that they should get more money.
Right.
And they made a demand that was not acceptable to us.
Yeah.
And we made a demand that was not acceptable to them. And so we just parted company.
Yeah.
It was simply that. The contract ran out.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was no I quit, there was no walking out, there was none of that vitriol that people were reporting.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, the Rangers were pissed off, they weren't getting paid enough, and I get that.
Yeah.
But actors are always pissed off that they're not getting paid enough. Then they weren't, by the way.
Exactly. So were you involved in, like, the motion picture when it went to Australia?
A little bit.
What was that like?
Technically, I consulted on it, although I was uncredited.
For sure.
I went out there ostensibly to do the ADR for the TV show. Because the Rangers had to go there, but we still had November episodes for November ratings period, November sweeps.
Right.
And so they had to do their ADR for that. So I flew out there to do it in Australia while they're there.
Yeah.
And the movie started out rough.
Mm.
It was a rough start on the movie. And so Chaim asked me to stay in country and keep an eye on things. And
okay.
So I became the most hated person on that set because I would tell on them all the time. And I don't know how much of this is true, but it was related to me by somebody else. But in the midst of all of that, Chaim ended up getting pissed off, contacting Rupert Murdoch, and they had it out. Apparently he threatened to pull the licenses and sue me.
Wow.
You're treating my people badly, and you're treating my property badly, and you know.
Yeah.
And that changed everything. So after that, I was invited to the set every day to look at the last night's rewrites and give my comments. I couldn't veto.
Sure.
If I said that sucks, you can't do it, they usually didn't. And the problem that I was having is they were taking Goldar in the movie and making him a complete imbecile. And he was going to be my main bad guy in the following seasons that we were already writing.
Yeah.
I couldn't have that happen.
Yeah.
So we... so I was there the whole time they shot. I was on set a lot. The famous day when Johnny Bosch did the disappointment scene that he was a frog.
Yeah.
I was in the room. I saw that happen. I thought that was the best bit of acting he'd ever did, only to find out he wasn't acting. He was really upset.
Hey, some of the best, like, moments.
It was the best moment. Yeah. It really was his best moment in the movie.
Is there anything that you would like to say to the fans who have, you know, supported for 30 years and still have Mighty Morphin, that love of Mighty Morphin in their hearts?
Yeah, I do. A heartfelt thank you. We worked hard on that.
Yeah.
We worked under a circumstance where the feeling is if we didn't pull it off, we were done. You know, so there was a lot of pressure. And the fact that everybody was able to bring... the people who watched it found the spirit of the show and brought it home with them. And that's made all the difference. We were the... I've been in two iconic shows, Robotech, which informed and inspired the people who fought the first Gulf War, and Robotech that inspired and informed the people who fought the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And so... that deep military connection has also become very special to me because of that.
Right.
So my thing is just that, you know, the whole purpose, the whole philosophy of Rangers was to be good and kind to each other, be responsible, clean up your own messes, brains before brawn, all of that stuff.
Right.
And those people who have taken that message out in the world, you're doing God's work. Thank you.
Great. Well, it's been great talking with you, Tony, so I really appreciate your time.
My
Thank
pleasure.
You so
Thanks
much.
A lot.
All right.
All right.
Thanks. All right, so Teresa, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at TetGB17 and my other social media for Planner and other things at Tet, T-H-E-T underscore thanks.
That's awesome. And then we'll have all those links in the show notes. You can find me at TreyB47 on Twitter. I'm never calling it X. On Twitter, Instagram, but you can find all of my links at Linktree at link tr.ee/TrekkieB47. And Ranger Nation, let us know what you think. If you have questions, you can email us at rangercommandpowerhour@gmail.com or check us out on rangercommand.com. We're on Twitter at rangercommandph and Instagram and Facebook at Ranger Command Power Hour, all one word. We're also on Threads and Blue Sky, so check us out there. Again, all the links are at linktr.ee/RangerCommandPH. You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphin Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ranger Command PH. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at Ranger Command Power Hour. Ranger Command is also on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/RangerCommandPH to learn more. Thanks for listening.